Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your Good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
EE Full Fiber Broadband can handle all of your gaming needs. 100 patch updates while you boss your multiplayer game. Every neighbor round for a tournament, BYO console. All while your family streams everything and anything around the house, no problem. With EE Full Fiber, you can connect 100 devices in your home.
This is broadband that can handle anything.
Next level unlocked.
This is EE Full Fiber, powered by BT.
18.3% UK availability. Check coverage at ee.co.uk.
What's going on, everybody? Patrick Barry here, and we are back again. It is microsode time. You guys get a second microsode in the month of July. This is how this calendar worked out, and we had to make sure that our roundup was our 300th episode. So, surprise, back-to-back microsodes in your feed this week, and in 2 weeks, you get another micro. Look at us go. All this content in your ears. I'm being joined by all the boys on the West Coast in the wee hours of the morning. I mean, not really wee hours, but for us, sometimes getting up that early is tough. It was for me this morning. We've got Brian over on the West Coast.
Hola.
And then, I mean, in the middle of their day on the East Coast, we have Eric.
Howdy.
And BJ.
What's up?
Is that? I love the fact that Jane barked like right when I introduced Eric, as if Jane was responding.
Oh no, that's my roommate. So I have a new microphone for those of you listening, and that is my roommate's dog, all the way downstairs in the laundry room, upset that his dad is currently outside doing something without him.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say I didn't think Jane barked like that.
No, but she's asleep right now in the corner of the room. So with the new microphone, I might actually have to kick her awake a couple times because she does snore. So,
well, the audience, I'm sure, will appreciate the new crisp quality of your microphone, and maybe we'll see if we can work with you on tweaking it to get less of the downstairs noise in the recordings.
They'll get to hear more of my lovely voice. Hi, everybody.
It's just more ambiance you're bringing to the recording. So, I mean, who could be upset with that? I mean, probably some people out there, but whatever.
The person editing the podcast?
I mean, unless it absolutely disrupts the recording, it's not a problem to me. And nobody's chewing. I know that can sometimes be a thing that listeners will be very upset about on a podcast. I swear, I thought that Alaska was just going to start eating chips on every episode after that letter came in.
Oh my god. Anywho. I love that they so since we always talk about race chasers, I love that they celebrated Horse Day. Was it national, international, whatever, Horse Day, and people were sending Alaska everything and she was living for it. I was like, oh my god, that's great.
I mean, she's got the market on horses and snakes. I mean, I think she shares the snakes with Taylor Swift, but I love that she just embraces it. I mean, you have to. That's just, you know, If you don't and you let it get to you, it's just going to destroy you. So good on her for that. But of course, there is a race chaser reference on our podcast. No matter what we're talking about, it's how we do. But we are not here to talk Drag Race. That'll be another episode that is before this. And most likely, oh yeah, no, definitely after it. We got two episodes left. Such a good season. I don't want it to ever end. But it will, sadly. Although it'll be nice to not have to record an episode every week. But we are here to talk Ms. Marvel, the Disney Plus television show that just wrapped up its first question mark, only question mark season series. I'm not 100% sure.
They'll bring it back. They'll bring it back.
They've been playing it fast and loose with a lot of like, because I know Obi-Wan what is supposed to be a limited time. It was supposed to be a limited thing, and it looks like it is. But then what was the last? I think it was Moon Knight. Moon Knight was supposed to be a one-time thing, but then they were changing what the last episode was being billed as. Originally, it was a series finale, and then it was a season finale, and even Oscar Isaac's like, I don't know what's going on. So,
yeah, that was the big kind of hubbub on Twitter and social media, was they scrubbed all of the original posts that said, watch the series finale on Wednesday, and then replaced it with watch the season finale on Wednesday, which sent the internet into a spiral going, wait, are we getting more Moon Knight? I think, and I mean, we'll get obviously into the show itself, but I think this is one that could benefit from having more seasons of a show, because I mean, honestly, she is more of a street level, you know,
yeah,
character in the day-to-day type of stuff. So I would love to see more stories with her and her friends and those street level adventures, rather than waiting every couple of years for another movie to follow some sort of storyline. But we're jumping the gun here. Ms. Marvel, it's an American television miniseries, according to Wikipedia, created by Bisha K. Ali for the streaming service Disney Plus, based on the Marvel comics featuring the character Kamala Khan / Ms. Marvel. It is the 7th television series. God damn, we're already at seven shows in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, produced by Marvel Studios, sharing continuity with the films of the franchise. It follows Kamala Khan, a 16-year-old fangirl of the Avengers, who struggles to fit in until she gains her own powers. Ali served as head writer, with Adil and Balil leading the directing team. So, as has become customary for our deep dives, let's dive into a little bit of what we enjoyed taking away from the series, and then we'll spin it around to the things that we maybe thought could have been better or improved, and then we'll finish off with some wild conjecture, because this does lead into a film property that will be coming in 2023. So, Eric, I'm going to throw it over to you to start the discussion. What were some of your positive takeaways from Ms. Marvel?
The bright and cheery nature of the show, especially the first two episodes right off the bat, hooked me. It reminded me a bit of Scott Pilgrim in the way they especially were shooting the text conversations, which can be increasingly difficult to portray on film or TV, because it's such a bigger part of our lives versus telephone conversations is text conversations. And how do you portray that to the audience? What's going on in real time? And I thought they did a great job with having that show up in like thought bubbles on walls and neon signs. That was just kind of ingenious. Also the shot of when her and shoot, what's her friend's name?
Brian.
Boy.
Nakia. Nakia.
No, the
Nakia,
boy.
Bruno.
Nakia, oh, sorry. Bruno.
We don't talk about him.
When they're talking about getting her costume ready for Avenger Con, and they're just throwing out extra ideas to make it more special, and the illustrations of what they're talking about are popping up on the wall and graffiti behind them. That kind of stuff was just so interesting to see them do that. It reminded me, again, of Scott Pilgrim. It reminded me of, a bit of Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
And so that was cool. I loved her family dynamic, her mom and dad were just great throughout the entire season. Yeah. And so those were some of the things.
Her dad was an absolute treasure.
Absolutely.
When he like barged into the room in the Hulk tunic and costume that her mom made. First of all, her mom needs to start making outfits for drag queens because she turned that shit out quickly.
Yeah.
I've never seen an outfit come together so fast. It was incredible. But he was just an absolute treasure and a delight. And it was so weird to see the complexities of this show in particular, and seeing her interactions and her relationship with her mom, and then seeing like generational trauma. Like, really, we're coming right back to Encanto with, you know, the generational trauma and how it affects you, and how, without realizing it, you pass it along to your children, and finding a way to stop that and break the cycle. So to see her dynamics with her parents throughout the series, it definitely was a great storyline to carry through from beginning to end, for sure.
That actor who played her father, Mohan Kapoor, this is actually not his first Marvel property, which is interesting, but the movies and TV and whatever he's done about with Marvel, he's done as a voice actor. He's actually a very well-known South Asian actor who does hosting for South Asian television and other things, but also does voiceover work. And so he dubbed, oh my God, this is so great. He dubbed Sebastian Shaw in X-Men First Class in Hindi.
Wow.
And he's done other stuff too. So anyway, I thought that was really interesting, but he was such a treat, like just so relatable, so energetic. The cast across the board for this show, maybe with a couple exceptions, was just stellar. And I really, I love that they hired a lot of people for these roles that were, you know, actually of the ethnicity that the roles were supposed to be. So that's really important. And not a surprise nowadays, but certainly good that is not reverting back to previous eras, let's say. But
a relief.
Yeah, well, and you really can't with this story because it's so intrinsically Pakistani and Muslim and from that, you know, region. It's like if you didn't do it that way, I think that'd be egregious. But in a bygone era, it could have happened.
I was going to say that like 20, 30 years ago, right, it would have been all white people telling this story.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. No, but you're absolutely right. To see a story about Pakistani people being portrayed by the actual people that our descendants are part of this history was fantastic. And I'll just say before we throw it over for our next kind of highlights, I am sad but so happy that there are things that the younger generation is now being exposed to that aren't necessarily taught the right way in like, especially in America. Like, I'm not going to speak for the rest of the world. They probably have a better history curriculum in their schools, but you look back at Watchmen teaching a whole generation that never knew about the Tulsa massacre about that piece of that dark part of our history that does not get taught in schools. And then to see a show that went into so much detail and talked about the partition and how that disrupted so many lives, how damaging it was incredible to kind of have that history lesson baked into, not preachy, not, hey, here's this whole, you know, thing that we're going to be teaching you, but to weave it into the story and Kamala's ancestry and how all of that tied together. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
BJ, what are some highlights from you on Ms. Marvel?
So I have been, the world building for this show, as opposed to the rest of all the Marvel series and movies and everything, because now that we're definitely waist deep in Marvel TV shows. I want to say this show and the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, have both done a really good job of kind of developing more of the Marvel world. We're post-Endgame, we're post-blip. And whereas Captain America and the Winter Soldier gave us a more world view of how everything is going in the world, Ms. Marvel gave us more of a like a everyday, like they're like most of the cast is teenagers just trying to navigate their lives. You've got Bruno, who's incredibly talented. You've got Kamala, who is talented in different ways, but she's got her heads ahead in the clouds. She's a standard teenager. And I absolutely love how, they brushed off some deep cuts for this show. The Clandestine, I had to go to Wikipedia for that one. And I, when I was like, oh, okay. And then the callback to Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings and how the Ten Rings we're still not sure where those came from. The bangle, that Kamala's family passed down that the Clandestine were after. It did a really good job of setting that up, but it also did a excellent job. And I've been preaching this since WandaVision, the whole anti-superhuman sentiment kind of swirling, starting to bubble to the surface, especially when you have people that already have extreme amounts of bias, like that one agent. I don't even remember her name. She's a bitch. but the same thing, you had I like how they had the Department of Damage Control, which we saw that we had a couple of background characters from Spider-Man No Way Home, that one agent, but I love how they showed there were multiple chances at every corner for law enforcement, for fellow agents, for everybody to put her in her place and get her to stand down. And they didn't do it till it was a press snafu, till it was like she was storming a freaking high school, you know, in a predominantly Pakistani and Muslim neighborhood in New York City, like, you know, it's or New Jersey, but like close enough. But yeah, it was, they did a really good job of just kind of showing how things can go off the rails. And, I really like that. I absolutely like how they didn't shy away from that thing. Same with, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. They didn't shy away from certain bias, and racism and stuff popping up. And I love the fact that when Kamala went home, like she went to Pakistan, and was with some of her family members, you know, some of her family members were kind of like, I can't remember what her cousin called her, but it was like confused Desi in Pakistan. I think it was like panic or something. But yeah, they showed just kind of how fish out of water she is, kind of no matter where she is. That's Kamala all the way. Kamala is a very, it was one of the comics. I think it was Champions. Viv Vision looks at Kamala and says, you should be a Captain America. And she's like, there's already a Captain America. And she's like, there's also already a Captain Marvel, but you know, you fit that bill. And I think by the end of the series, or at least by the end of this season, she fit the bill of Ms. Marvel so well. She was such a delight too, for somebody that was casted on the internet. She fit the character to a T, and that one scene where she's sitting on a lamppost looking out over New Jersey or looking out at the bay, like that right there was like right off of one of the comics. So I'm super, super, super excited. I was nervous about how they were going to deal with her powers and everything. And then I think I'll wait for us to get to Wild Conjecture before I talk about that, her powers. But I got the word. I got the word in Biggin. That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted. And I got it. And when she whispered it to herself, I screamed and I got her awkward growth. It looks like it felt like by the end of the show, they had shied more away a little bit from the like more pretty magical girl aspects of her power, because when they had her body actually grow, it felt, I was like, I am absolutely watching Ms. Marvel come to life. This completes the circle for me So I got everything I wanted really in the show. And then to parallel y'all, her family, I absolutely love her family, Amir. She's got a sister-in-law, Taisha. I love how tight they are and how close-knit they are. And I grew up with a friend of mine who was from like a very traditional Pakistani family. So just seeing like her having to ask her brother to ask her parents to do something was very much the norm for a friend of mine, what she had to do when she was in like junior high with me all the time, of her having to get her brother to ask her parents for permission to do stuff. It was an absolute delight, and I actually would be very excited after the Marvels, because they did say after this show, the next time we'll see her is the Marvels. I would love to see all of her family and friends again in another season.
Yeah, I agree. And when I heard Embiggen, that was the point where I was like, oh, okay, now it feels like Ms. Marvel. There were two things that were said in that final episode that really just got me, and that was the first one. And the VFX budget may have been not as high as it needed to be, which is why they shied away from the embiggened Ms. Marvel and a lot of the powers, you know. But again, it's essentially a 6-episode television show. The budget's not going to be the same as it would be for a movie that they're going to expect to make, you know, $1 billion on. So for them to show what they did and portray her the way that they did, I may not have absolutely loved the transition of the powers to this type of power or this type of presentation, but even just getting that little bit, getting the embiggen, like it definitely was a thing that sparked joy in me in this finale. Brian, what were some positive highlights for you from Ms. Marvel?
So, I mean, first and foremost, I think the inclusion of a Muslim American, a Pakistani, from her family from Pakistan, superhero show that kept that spirit and truth was so important and entertaining. It's important, but I don't want to undersell how entertaining it was. But I'm so happy, like Pat, you were saying, that this story is there and that it digs into history that the U.S. educational system, at least from our experiences, and I don't think anyone on here, you know, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but like had learned about partition in that way, in any real, you know, way in our history classes. The only other time I can think of in pop culture that I've encountered partition was Doctor Who. I think it was the second season of the newest, well, the current Doctor. They go to India during the partition and have like a, you know, an episode about that. But
yeah, you're right.
This topic is so huge and critical and is usually, I think, probably lost because it falls into all of the World War II empire colonization fallout that just there's so much that happens at the end of World War II that I could sort of see why it gets kind of shuffled away. But, you know, I could see, I know a previous version of myself had no idea of the interrelation of Pakistan and India in that way, that families were just not forcibly, but basically forcibly kicked out of India, forced to leave their homes for generations and all their family and well, family maybe, but friends and other people like that hard line that the British Empire started, I guess, in some ways and perpetuated. And then that, you know, forcing all of them up into that region is just, it's such a crazy, I was talking about this last night and it's like, would you imagine now if like, and this probably would never happen, like all the Jews or all the Christians were basically said, all right, you know what? We'll focus on the Christians. Jews have had enough going on with them, right? The Christians, all you Christians, you get Texas. Now you gotta move. You gotta go down to Texas and that's Christian stand. And that's like, that's partition basically, you know, admittedly, I don't think the rest of society would be like burning down their houses and you know, running them out of town on a rail. But Yeah. Anyway, so it's just, it's such a crazy thing to imagine. So I love that they focused on that. I love the music. I was looking up some of the soundtracks because I actually want to start listening to them in my rotation.
Oh, yeah, the music is absolutely gorgeous in this show.
Laura Karpman, who I'm not familiar with, but I guess she had previously composed for What If. Also, can I just say the number of women composers that I have seen on projects in the last 10 years has grown exponentially, and that makes me so happy. What's her name? Natalie Hoyt. Is it Natalie Hoyt or Natalie... I think it's Natalie Hoyt. Anyway, who did Miss Loki, also another phenomenal talent. And there's been many over the years, but like not as many, at least that I've been tracking. Very good stuff. A lot of South Asian music, which, you know, it's funny because it's not something that's in my heavy rotation typically. But like when like Bend It Like Beckham or some other pop culture thing kind of rises through the noise and I get back into that world, like I love Indian Bollywood music. I love South Asian gamelan. I just so much. I was not, we're not talking about Drag Race, but there was a thing last night that Raja did in Drag Race that was so just it, right up my alley with the Bali stuff. So I stand, as the kids say, I stand for that stuff. But back to the whole, like, you know, Miss Marvel adaptation, I think it had some issues. I think we'll get into maybe some of that. But overall, as an origin for her, that is true in most ways. And in some ways, you know, there's one thing we'll talk about that's even more true to her actual, like, roots than the comics even did. And I don't mean ethnic roots. It's really awesome. And just to get it so right, I love the Scott Pilgrim stuff at the beginning. Thankfully, that did not track through the whole series. I think that would have been a lot and probably too much. I loved seeing Karachi. I've never in my life said, I want to go to Pakistan and I want to go to Karachi. But, you know, now I'm, you know, I don't know. I'd consider it. It's definitely a beautiful looking city. And I meant to look up how much they actually filmed on location. I assume they filmed some. I mean, obviously some of that's very much sets. But, you know, I hope that at least some stuff was filmed there. it's just cool to see something that, you know, again, we in the US just do not get a lot of in normal pop culture, you know. And I love the damage control stuff is interesting. It's a deep cut in Marvel a little bit because we don't see a lot of damage control stuff these days. But you know what's funny, and I did not know this until just recently, damage control was actually co-created by Dwayne McDuffie, who created Shock, and a lot of some of the other Milestone characters. So I love that Dwayne McDuffie's a Black Marvel and DC Comics writer, that his legacy is alive in this series, as well as, of course, G. Willow Wilson and her other co-creators for Ms. Marvel. And I'm really happy I read that they were consulted on some of the changes. Of course, you know, seeing her yell and biggin and start to use that power that way was delightful in every little comics Miss Marvel fans squeed, I'm sure, in their pants or whatever. But, like, you know, overall, it's probably been one of the best, most true in spirit, if not in, like, the letter of the law, of the letter of the comic, to a character in all of the Marvel stuff that I've seen. And I know they're going to do another series. I think we're going to get the movie first, maybe, the Marvels movie. But I would be shocked and amazed, given the reception that this show got, that they wouldn't do another series at some point. So I thoroughly enjoyed that. And the cast. Yeah, there's so much to talk about with this thing, but we'll stop there. We'll talk more about the cast, I'm sure, but just delightful, the whole thing.
So one of the things that I loved, kind of piggybacking off of your comments about Karachi and Pakistan, was the inclusion of Urdu and Hindi and the fact that... The one thing that I thought was weird, though... As much as I love the fact that, like, we're letting these characters speak in their language, their native language, we're not kind of circling around that doesn't exist in life, was the fact that the Hindi would get subtitled, but the Urdu wouldn't if you were watching in subtitles or anything, even on the screen. I know subtitles are awesome for a lot of people. I tend to get wrapped up in them, so I usually don't watch a lot of television with subtitles. But I'm finding that it's helping a bit, especially with some of the Marvel shows, because they like to have a lot of soft dialogue. And when I'm watching, when they were speaking in Urdu, they kind of went away from any type of translation for it, where like the subtitles would just say, you know, speaking in Urdu. But then when they went to Pakistan and her family was speaking in Hindi, that all got translated. So it was very odd to see like how the production team was working with the languages. But I love the inclusion of it. I loved the fact that the opening credits always morphed around kind of what was going on. The fact that there was Pakistani influenced credits, there was Urdu, there was Hindi, especially in those episodes that were really like focused when they were back in Pakistan. Najma and the clandestine, that was interesting with the veil and the Noor and the Jinn, not Antonic, that joke that Bruno made early on. But it was a very interesting take. A lot of what Phase 4 has been doing, especially in the more recent television shows, and it's kind of spilled over a bit into the movies, the more recent movies, there's a lot of play on faith and the afterlife and the different planes that essentially death, the forms that death takes, the different planes, the ancestral plane, the Duat that we saw in Moon Knight.
Valhalla,
for the Asgardians. I don't know how many people have seen. I know that a few people on this call have not seen Love and Thunder, and Valhalla plays a part in that. But I won't speak more on it. But it's come up a bunch of times, obviously, throughout the Thor movies and in the comics as well. So we're seeing a lot of the afterlife and faith-based characters, and this transition of gods from gods to aliens, essentially, otherworldly creatures that have been deified by humans over the course of thousands of years, where Phase 4 is really taking that deification and undeifying them, giving us a little bit more of a humanized version of these ethereal creatures or beings that guide our faith on Earth or Midgard. And it's interesting to see the veil, you know, piercing the veil, the Jinn's home world kind of not necessarily being that type of afterworld, but a similar type of alternate plane that's existing almost incursion style with our reality and our realm, and that if it did open, it essentially would swallow our reality and we'd all die.
Yeah, it's so, they mentioned, I was gonna say that's it's a similar thing to what they did in Shang-Chi with Shang-Chi's mother's, they're like existing in like a pocket dimension that can be mm-hmm. accessed, but it's guarded. Like, so it's like was it the Red Daggers? He put up that map that showed mm-hmm. like alternate planes of existence. Yeah, of overlap. Yeah. So it's not like a different universe, but they're showing that there's different like pocket dimensions and areas within Earth. And that was part of the world building thing that I like too. That there's there's areas that you probably shouldn't go to or like break through to. And then there's areas that are closely guarded. So yeah, I see what you're saying there.
Absolutely, because like when Wu was trying to release the spirit of his dead wife, that was being tricked into opening, essentially the same thing, opening this realm that would take over, Earth or our reality essentially. So it was very interesting to see how that went. Kamran and his journey, that was an interesting parallel. The little scene that they did where it was that very kind of neon lights dream sequence that Kamala was having when she was falling for the boy, that was adorable. One of the things that I really, at first I didn't hear it I heard the first part, but I did not hear the musical sting that accompanied it until afterwards, when Joel, friend of the pod, who's been on the show a couple of times, messaged me because I tweeted out about, you know, a spoiler-free kind of excitement after watching the finale. And he said, did you hear the musical sting? And I said, no, I did not. But one of the things that they have introduced with this series are mutants. In the last scene before the credits, not the post-credit scene, but Nakia and Bruno and Kamala are hanging around because Kamran left his car. So Bruno is joyriding in that. But he lets Kamala know that he went back and looked at her, the readings that he had done after she had first unlocked her powers with the bangle. And he said that, well, and partially because her brother wanted to see if he had powers as well. But he did another take of the scan, and it shows that it's not the bangle, but that there's a mutation. And then when that word was said, they did the X-Men 97 sting that they did for Professor X in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Again, cueing into the X-Men, this X-Men 97 cartoon that's going to be coming next year. All of these plans to introduce mutants into the MCU. So we're building that world. We're figuring out what is going on that's creating this or causing this, and how this is going to introduce mutants into a world that's existed now for many years, and we haven't had them around.
Did you know?
I was going to say, the only thing that makes me sad about them rewriting and having some inhuman erasure at this point is that you know which inhuman Kamala hangs out with like the most, right? I'm sad about that, yeah, because I want Lockjaw back in the MCU.
They could have done it with Doctor Strange, and then they didn't.
I know!
Missed opportunity.
So bad. Like, should have teleported in with Lockjaw and then teleported out and fucking lived.
EE Full Fiber Broadband can handle all of your gaming needs. 100 patch updates while you boss your multiplayer game. Every neighbor round for a tournament. BYO console. All while your family streams everything and anything around the house, no problem. With EE Full Fiber, you can connect 100 devices in your home. This is broadband that can handle anything.
Next level unlocked.
This is EE Full Fiber, powered by BT.
18.3% UK availability. Check coverage at ee.co.uk.
Hey there, listener. Do you have something to say? Then you're already a podcaster. You just don't know it yet. Whether you love to shoot the breeze with your friends, have an urge to share your passion with the world, or even want to grow your business, you've got something worth saying with a podcast. With Acast, it couldn't be easier to start your own show. Launch, grow, and make money from your podcast across all listening platforms. If you have something to say, you're a podcaster. Head over to acast.com to get started for free.
But I love the fact that ever since they started, all of the shows and everything that they've talked about doing is everybody has been salivating for mutants. Every time somebody sneezes or farts in a show, like when they introduce Madripoor in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they're like, Madripoor is a big mutant thing. And, you know, like, and everybody, and they're like, Professor Xavier's in Doctor Strange Mom, like, there's a mutant thing, and it never pans out the way everybody has, all the wild conjecture and everything, and then the one time you're not expecting it, the one time you're like, oh, she's an Inhuman in the comics, we'll probably get an Inhuman thing, but, and the moment he says the word mutation, and you're like, what? But I like that, the fact that they kind of subverted that expectation slightly. And mutants, we still make...
It's mutants and Mephisto. Those are the two things that they're trolling with us for years. But do you know what's interesting? And I did not realize this, though it totally tracks with the time period. For those of you who don't read comics, and, you know, you should, but, you know, I don't read them as much, whatever. The Inhumans were sort of shoehorned into a lot of storylines in the, what is that, in early 2010s, I guess. Is that about right? I feel like.
Yeah.
And it was basically later, we all thought this, but it was basically later revealed and confirmed that part of the reason was the Inhumans were sort of a nice stand-in for the X-Men universe, and the X-Books, or the X-Books, sorry, the X-Men film rights were owned by Fox. And so at that time, Marvel could not use Fox properties because they didn't own Fox at that time. And so Inhumans sort of took on this prominence that was, you know, organic and story-driven and all that. But a lot of storylines that were planned prior to that were actually mutant storylines. And Kamala Khan was originally meant to be a mutant, not an Inhuman.
Yeah.
So the fact that they have now sort of corrected that in the MCU, at least, is delightful. And again, I did not realize that because you would never have known that just reading the book. The book was very much right after Terra Genesis and Lockjaw shows up, and it just felt like, yeah, okay, sure. But really, it was originally a mutant story. So I'm really kind of now tickled by the fact that they did that. And I also totally missed the Sting. Normally, I catch those. I totally caught the one in Doctor Strange. But, you know, I thought I heard something. And, you know, I probably did have the volume a little low. This show, more than others, was low at a lot of times and then high at a lot of times. So I had a hard time riding the gain on this series sometimes. But yeah, I'm sorry. It was so exciting, and I'm glad that they've made Kamala Khan a mutant.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And then they've as of this recording, they're currently doing a lot of stuff at San Diego Comic-Con. They did a lot of release stuff yesterday. Yesterday was Friday, the 22nd. They did a lot of release information for Marvel Animation. However, they did, there were some small press release stuff, I want to say, before the finale of Miss Marvel. And one of the rumor mill things is that she could potentially encounter the Inhumans could be reintroduced in the Marvels movie. So we shall see, but that would be interesting if Kamala is like one of the characters that actually has first contact with the Inhumans in some way, shape, or form. Since if it's a movie involving Captain Marvel, I'm very interested to see if they introduce the kind of revisit the Kree, and because I know we're definitely going to be revisiting the Skrulls in the Secret Invasion miniseries. Yeah, there's been a lot of chatter around reintroducing the Inhumans in the MCU around the same time they're going to possibly be introducing mutants.
Inhumans could be who she sees when she puts on the bangle and does that thing and sees all the shapes with the eyes.
Oh yeah. So I'm very, but no, it was a very wonderful surprise and subverted a lot of expectations where everybody was just crying mutants and Mephisto. And and I remember I'd heard something of what Brian said where he's like, she was supposed to be a mutant, but they were in the middle of kind of like pushing the mutants out of the comics to sell more comics and all that. And so it'll be, like I said, it's going to be super interesting, especially since the rumor is that also one of the villains for the Marvels is potentially supposed to be Rogue. So we shall
see. Which I feel is like, that's a weird point. Like, I know that I know because I'm a huge Rogue fan. I know that there's history with Carol Danvers, but you've completely changed the trajectory of her entire like career. Like, she's starting out as Captain Marvel. She's not starting out as Ms. Marvel. We don't have this whole thing where she gets her powers drained and then becomes binary and then back to Ms. Marvel and then finally to Captain Marvel. I don't know if I really like, I feel like you're just pandering for that storyline. And don't get me wrong. If we bring Rogue in, I'm going to love it because I fucking love Rogue, but I don't know if that's something that I don't know how it would work. Like, I don't know how it would feel.
I mean, she just was
this point.
They'll just, Carol Danvers was just never Miss Marvel. There was only one Captain Marvel and one Miss Marvel. Now they're going to, that whole section of Carol being Captain Marvel. And they've gone on record and saying that Binary is more about her ability. She, like, she goes binary.
Yeah,
as opposed
they
to
did her, it in the movie.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
So they're yeah, but so they're not. Carol's always going to be Captain Marvel, so they're not. They're probably not going to make her revisit or redo anything as far as her identity goes.
The only way that I think it could work and like say and honor the storyline. I get what you're saying, BJ. 100%. My thing with it is. The reason that the Rogue Carol Danvers confrontation shaped and put them both on a certain path in the comics that led them to where they got to eventually, because Carol lived in Rogue's head for many years and drove her insane and eventually helped her reform and become a better person. You know, that's when she went and sought help from Xavier. The thing that I think could work is potentially in a flashback, have them like have it be somebody from Carol's past that now, like, you know, don't have the first interaction be something that's happening now. Have it be something from the past that maybe she didn't remember, or like the memories are a bit more jumbled, where you can have that interaction, that altercation, and then have it come back around where, you know, it's been years since that altercation and the whatever, like play on back, you know, flashbacks and storyline that we're not seeing happen, and then have her like be a part of the current story. I don't think shoehorning her in now, if like that's their first interaction, it just doesn't feel like you could have a whole different storyline. But we'll see. Again, if we get Rogue, I will be super happy. If it's not Anna Paquin, I will be even happier. Because that is my least favorite version of Rogue is the first three movies from 2000 to whatever, 2003, 2005 when the Last Stand came out.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Oh, was it 08? I don't even remember. I try to block out the second and third movie. Actually, no, just the third movie. The second one was really good. X2, X-Men United was good. Still a bad Rogue, but a good movie. Anywho. And then the last thing on the highlights that I want to mention, I loved how female empowered this show was. Not even just from the Kamala Khan standpoint. I mean, you get lines like, you know, it's not the brown girl from New Jersey that saves the world, which I think is actually pulled right from the comics themselves. But Nakia, like Nakia's storyline and wanting to become a member of the Mosque board.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's not something that traditionally is a female held position.
Yes.
The fact that they were pushing this so hard when they did that, the Eid festival, and they were like separating and going like, you get the Illuminantes was my favorite of the, like the sections, but even just, was it, did Nakia go and talk to Kamala's dad?
It was Kamala's dad, and the thing is, he was going to vote for his best friend, but Nakia came in guns a-blazing. She was like, you know, we're kind of family, and I feel like I'm your daughter, too. So would you vote against your own daughter? Your own family? Like, she came in with a knife, but, and I'm like...
Not even that, though. That wasn't even the part that got him. It was the fact that she was like... Would you want to crush a young girl's dreams?
Yes.
That was the point. Because he knows he wants his daughter to follow her dreams. Because we kind of touched on it before. Spanish families in this instance share a lot of similarities when it comes down to like the family dynamics. You want, or even Asian families, I know this is kind of a thing that I've seen from other creators that have shared their stories. But following a creative path is usually looked down upon because there isn't stability. There's not financial security. And the parents want you to get your head out of the clouds and find a stable job or something that's going to be able to support you. And that's a lot of what the tension is between Kamala and her mom, because Kamala is very artistic and creative and making her videos and doing all of this stuff. And she wants her to be secure in her life. So Yusuf, Kamala's dad, is the same way. He wants his daughter and by extension, Nakia, his surrogate daughter, in essence, to be able to follow their dreams. And if that's something that they want to do. And when Nakia hit him with that, mm-hmm. that was the moment you literally saw it on his face go, well, you know what? She just literally said the right thing to me. So I love it. Yeah. Nakia as a character, phenomenal. I did not realize that in the comics, she actually ends up starting a relationship with, is it Zoe, the TikToker?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's yeah. that was so like they kind of even set that up a little bit when they were in the gym talking to each other. Like there was a little bit of that building, and I was like, this is cute. But yeah, overall, I think a lot of great highlight points that we all went over. So on the flip side, let's do a little round robin. We had a lot of great things. Who's got some maybe things that they wish were a little bit better or done a little bit different in this show?
So for me, it was honestly for me, it's it pacing's always a challenge with Marvel shows and movies, and pacing's always a challenge for anything. I loved the flashback about her great grandmother, about Aisha and her great grandmother and great grandfather getting together. Beautiful, absolutely romantic. I laid there and cried like an idiot for about a good 10 minutes. The time traveling thing was excessive. I felt like that could have done better with like her literally just using the bangle to mentally connect with her great grandmother in a way. I don't feel like she needed to physically go back in time for that. But half that episode was mostly just the flashback of Aisha, and I loved mm-hmm. it. Like that was great. And then I was expecting her to like pop in at some point, but like I didn't expect her to literally pop in then pop out like all of a sudden. I think it would have just been fine if she had literally when what's her name hit the bangle, that it caused her to just link with her great grandmother for like a quick second. And then she created the stars. Like that, there was a quicker, cleaner way of doing that. But the emotional impact was perfect. Like I wouldn't want to do anything to remove the emotional impact. But as far as I go, that pacing that disrupted the pacing a little bit for about an episode, like a quarter of an episode for me. And I'm sure it could have been cleaner in other episodes as well. But that was the only thing that really stood out for me as far as pacing goes. My only thing.
Related to pacing, I think they did suffer some production issues as far as COVID, because, you know, who didn't? Ah. And I know from just some of the reading I did, they wanted to do a little bit more with the Red Dagger storyline and the clandestine storyline. Yep. And overall, I think some of the weaker moments were sort of the fact that it had a lot they threw at it. And though the through line is very much true and consistent with Kamala's journey, so you know that all tracks very well. You know, it was almost more about her family journey than the external threats, you know, as kind of a big bad. But you know, damage control being there, yeah, fine, it sort of works, and it does build off the anti superpower sort of sentiment like BJ said earlier. But I think they could have, in a better world where more less COVID, more resources, whatever, they could have told a more consistent story, just filling in the gaps. But honestly, whether it was because of production limitations or just a writer's choice, the fact that they made it about Kamala's family and her journey, you know, a lot of people surprisingly don't like superhero stories or comic book stories. And I have seen this particular and others somewhat as well, the story being more relevant and more interesting for people who don't like superhero movies and shows, because it's less about the theatrics of the superhero genre and more about the family and relationship and sort of real world grounded storytelling. And that's something that Marvel has always strived for, even in their comics. You know, you tell people this, and they kind of laugh because you're like, are you kidding me? But honestly, Marvel has always tried to infuse real stakes and real world dynamics, locations, characters, all of it in their storytelling within the superhero genre. So I think that it's sort of a mix of that. I did also do a quick check just so I know our fans are interested. They did not film in Karachi, at least not with the actors. All of the stuff was filmed, or most of it was filmed in Atlanta, of course. They had some shots in Jersey City and a couple like B-roll, really talking like B-roll, may have been like a little bit of Karachi. But I guess because Pakistan, relation-wise, it's not the best fit right now politically with everything. So I think they chose to not go to Karachi for that. So they used Thailand, which is interesting. And I guess because of the South Asian heavy Muslim presence in that region, it all kind of worked. So yeah, but overall, I think that's my biggest issue with the story or with the series, really, was just some of the missed opportunities and not really building it more organically to fit everything together. But again, I think overall it did what it needed to do, and it was so entertaining.
For me, again, as you've said, the pacing was all over the place. It in the course of six episodes, there were basically two different shows here, and the show I wanted to see was just her being a girl that got powers and has to navigate her local, going to school, figuring out her powers, and how that interacts with her family dynamic and home. And I didn't need all of the extra going to Karachi, going to having the clandestine or the Red Daggers. I feel like it wasn't totally needed. And there could have been storylines where the wedding is the last episode. You can have the grandmother and the cousin, if you even want the cousins. I don't think the cousins added very much to Kamala's journey, other than just getting her out of the house and into the city, to then conveniently run into the Red Dagger. You have the grandma come to Jersey City for the wedding, and then she can have a moment with Kamala where they're talking about the partition and what her father told her of her father's romance with, what's the great grandmother's name? Aisha?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aisha.
Yeah. And that can be how you get the flashback of that story. I think the partition stuff is very impactful. I don't think the way they told it was necessarily for pacing and story-wise. I'm not saying that we shouldn't learn about it, because we definitely should. It's a very important piece of history. But I think there was just, in the writer's room, there was a lot of yes-anding when there should have been a little more editing happening. Damage Control, I think, was still a good overall villain, quote unquote, because I don't think they're necessarily villainous in that intent. But with that reveal at the very end with the word mutant, you kind of take away all of the Noor and all that. You basically said, oh, she's a mutant. And going forward, other mutants that they bring in aren't going to have this whole, oh, I'm half other thing from another dimension. So how does that explain their powers? You know, it seems like they wanted to add everything Ms. Marvel from the entire comics that they've had so far into this six episode show. And it just felt too full for me.
No, I think you're right, Eric. I think they tried to really give the coverage they felt the material deserved, without having the real estate, so to speak, to really unpack it and get it done right. And that's kind of what I was saying, and I think what BJ was saying. It's pacing and also just story crafting. Again, it sounds like some of these production issues were mid-production or early to mid. So the writers probably came in, broke the story, and did this thing that maybe fit it all together better. Mm-hmm. And then they got to the actual execution, and they're like, oh, crap, we can't do that. And that happens, you know, even without COVID, that happens all the time. So I would be hopeful that next series and the movie would allow for a little bit more breathing room, maybe for some of her superheroics and her storytelling. Maybe probably not with Bruno and Nakia and her crew, you know, in Jersey until maybe the next series. But yeah, they definitely had issues with that whole process. I just, to me, as someone who is a comic book fan and loves this material, but also is really, I think the storytelling from a real world, you know, multicultural perspective, that most of it landed with the Karachi Pakistani family legacy. To me, that was important. That was more important, honestly.
And I'm not saying that wasn't important. I'm just saying you didn't necessarily need to go to Karachi to include all of that family dynamic stuff.
Yeah, it took him out. Like, it took him away from her supporting cast for two out of six episodes. That's a third of the show.
Yeah, it was a good bonding moment with her mom, but you could have had her mom and her grandmother have that conflict and then resolution just by having the grandma come to Jersey City for the wedding.
No, I will stop you there just for one point. One point that I'll put out there. One of the biggest things that helped repair that relationship was the milk toffee boxes all around her mom's house. You laugh.
Oh, yeah.
That was huge. Because like the opening episode, that's what the stuff is sent over to them in, but it's a key point in their relationship because her Kamala's mom says to her mom, or kind of yells at her like, why do you have all these boxes? And it's this moment where she says, you know, it's because you love them, and you know, like it's that start of. That's that little crack in the dam of their relationship, the tension in their relationship that eventually breaks open when they kind of get into it. But that's a huge piece. And if you bring the grandmother to Jersey, you don't have that. I get you on everything else, but it's very small detail that helps build that story between the mom and the grandma.
Sure, but there's nothing to say that the writers couldn't have found another little thing. I mean, the grandma could have always had milk toffee in her purse that she brings out anytime, just random times throughout her visit.
It's the pack readiness.
Sure.
Yeah. It's a very interesting thing, and it's not something that I thought about at first. But watching the new Rockstars breakdown of that episode, that's something that gets pointed out. And the way that Eric Voss kind of breaks down the way that it's used in the storytelling, it's very interesting. And I agree with you guys on all this. And it's a very it's a weird way to try to compact all of the story into six episodes. But I did appreciate that bit of starting to break down their conflict and finding a way to resolution using something like that. Because I mean, a lot of times when you're getting older and your parents are getting older, they'll hoard things, and it can be that source of tension. So to utilize something like that, because then that became a through line for the resolution of the generational trauma of the women in the family, because in Karachi, when after Kamala comes back, she and her mom are sitting at the table and having the milk toffees, and then it becomes this, it eventually is a way for them to start healing and breaking that cycle.
I will say another thing, as much as I love the dad is fantastic and everything, and he's so loving and caring to Kamala, the whole scene of him and her at the end, when all of a sudden he pulls out, oh, you know, your name means this. When did you guys learn what your name meant? Weren't you very young?
No.
No.
I have never been given an explanation for my name ever in my life, other than my grandmother named me.
Yeah,
that's all I got.
Very, very young.
Especially,
especially like church-wise, I was given a card. Oh, Eric means this with a corresponding Bible verse. I was very, very young. And I can't imagine that they've never had any sort of conversation relating to that before.
It's a fair point and a little bit of a creative conceit. I guess they could have said it as like a flashback, or they could have addressed it earlier in the series. But it's the writing way. I think the technique they're doing is a way to put a bow on that identity piece after she has sort of earned the identity and become fully fleshed out. Because so often the problem is superheroes sort of come out right out of the gate with their name. And that's just not typically how creative efforts ever work.
Wanda didn't get hers for like, Jesus.
Well, yeah, that's until
the end of the first like three phases of everything.
But like a temp project name is typically what sticks around for a long time until someone's like, wait a minute, no, we really should be called this. You know what I mean? Like a band. So I don't know. I think that was a conceit. I see what you mean. And especially in that culture, I think more so even than the American system inherent, you know, whatever, our European roots, apart from the church, of course, like Eric had the experience of, you don't get that family explanation of your name unless you're named after a dead relative, in which case you're named after a dead relative. Yeah. And then that's all that really matters to the family, right?
Because it just felt like, Kamala means this, but then went through the thesaurus. Oh, but it also means it could be translated to this. Oh, and Marvel.
Yeah.
Said you're our little Ms. Marvel,
that line in and of itself is super cute. But it just...
I literally cried. I will not be ashamed to say it. I literally had a white boy tears. I was like, this is... fucking adorable.
I was welling up, but then the moment she looks at him and goes, do you mean to tell me I share a name with Carol friggin' Danvers? And I was like, that was the appropriate Kamala reaction to that, of like,
because you can still get to that line by something as easy as, oh, they're in her bedroom and he goes, you really look up to this Captain Marvel, don't you? I mean, but I look up to you in a way. You're our little Miss Marvel, you know? I mean, options. There are...
Didn't you turn around and go, I don't know who that is? Which she said, I share a name with Carol freaking Danvers. Then wasn't his response like, I don't know who that is?
Exactly.
He's not going to necessarily know the real names of these heroes, you know? But again, I know that earlier, Brian, you said you were happy they kind of stepped away from the Scott Pilgrim-ness of the first two episodes, but I missed that throughout the thing. I felt like it was starting off on kind of an interesting foot, and then all of a sudden, it disappeared.
Yeah, it did. You're right. It totally did, and I think that's a tonal choice. I think they realized that a little goes a long way. That this is true in Into the Spider-Verse too. As much as it's a very like expressive and sort of part of that, and it's animated, so you can really get away with it in an animated space. I think it's hard to sustain that level as much in a show without distracting. And I think that was what they were trying to. That was the balance. But the fact that it like was gone, like the only thing you had after that was the credits, I think that was probably, they could have sprinkled it in judiciously more than they did, because it was arresting that first episode. I was like, wow, this is nothing like I've ever seen in a Marvel project other than Spider-Verse. And you know, again, comic wise like back to like a Scott Pilgrim. So I did like that, but I know other people were less enthusiastic.
They had to shift their budget from doing that to creating her powers on screen. So They didn't have any more money for it.
We didn't really even talk about that. I don't particularly think that's a detriment that they shifted her powers more. And we may have touched on a lot of people have talked about this.
Now that I've seen the show, it's definitely I'm good with it. Before the show, I was nervous about it, but just the way they did her storytelling and how she adjusted and how she came into her own identity, I'm good. It didn't have to be completely polymorph powers. Now that I've seen the show,
well, and it differentiates her from like a Mr. Fantastic and or some other polymorph, sure, you know, type character.
Yeah. Right?
The only thing is, and certainly if they bring in the full X-Men, they aren't going to necessarily get to her. But it feels a little Armory in a way. Is that her name?
Armor.
Especially when she went in Biggin, I was like, oh, that she's basically Armor right now.
But Armor with, because Armor can't, to my memory, which is horrible, can't increase her mass, like her shape. She can increase the armor shape and probably do some projection sort of stuff, but she can't like Ms. Marvel actually made her fists big and had that armor too. So it's a different thing. The shape shifting element isn't as important, at least for what they told. So I didn't have an issue with it at all.
And even in the comics, you have characters that have overlapping powers. So
no, that's true.
Whatever.
Well, like how many light projecting characters, comic book characters, are there ever? And I mean, right now, even in the MCU, I bet there's at least half a dozen or something. But yeah, her and Jubilee will have to have a light off, whatever, off. Or an Iceman. We'll mix Iceman in there. It'll be all kinds of weird shape projection. But yeah, I think we're all saying a lot of the same things. I think that the series did a lot of what it needed to. Were there problems? Yes, of course. Was it infinitely better than other attempts in Marvel stuff? Yes. But, you know, it's television. Remember, even though they're very movie cinematic level, and the budgets are certainly pretty big on these projects, I think. I haven't done the research to claim that definitively, but they are also not network TV shows. They are streaming, and you know, again, that can cut both ways. So I think given all those constraints, it looked great, and it was just I love that it exists.
Yeah, absolutely. So real quick, let's do a quick round of conjecture or things we want to see coming out of this, going into the Marvels and the rest of phase 4. BJ, what do you got?
All right, so with what's going on, it seems like a lot of people thought at the end of this that she turned into Carol Danvers. No, it looks like they just switched places, which is far worse because Carol is literally all over the entire friggin' universe. So I'm very excited for the Marvels because with Kamala and with Monica, you've got the perfect. Monica is very bitter with Carol. And we'll get to know more of that. But Monica's very bitter about Carol and disillusioned with her. But then you've got Kamala, who thinks she's quite literally the best thing since sliced bread. So you're going to have this wonderful dynamic. But at the same time, you're going to have Kamala in space, Carol on Earth. I believe Monica's supposed to be up in space as well. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic. I would like to think, because I can't remember the actress who they casted as one of the antagonists of the movie. They haven't said what her role is, so I would like to think she's either playing Rogue or Mystique, but I don't think she's going to be a major threat until the end of the movie. So we'll get some development, and then she'll either attack or try to hurt Carol and end up hurting one of the two other Marvels instead, which would be a nice setting off point for Captain Marvel to be somewhat anti-mutant. And like we could potentially get an Avengers versus X-Men sort of conflict later on down the line.
Oh God, no. We don't need to revisit AVX. As it is, we're getting AXE, and I'm done.
I'm pretty sure most of the Marvels movie is going to be Carol kind of navigating as somewhat as a leader, because she's literally never on Earth long enough to be a part of anything. And I think that's going to disillusion Kamala some, but I also think that Monica's going to get a very good look at what she's actually doing out there in space. So I'm very, this show made me super excited for the Marvels. And as for my flame ratings, it's definitely going to be a solid 4.5 out of 5 for the show.
Nice. Brian, wild conjecture.
I got nothing. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm kind of excited because I have no hot take like projection on what they could do from here other than something really interesting. Yes. Oh, actually, yeah. No, exactly. They're going to involve Mephisto for sure. Whatever they're going to do, I'm just excited. I honestly, if I had to pick a Marvel, Miss Marvel, Captain Marvel, I'm honestly more excited about Miss Marvel. Captain Marvel's great. I love her. I did they tweak her costume a bit, or was that the same costume she had
No, it's different.
I thought
the gloves are different.
Like,
there's some coloring changes. Yeah, it's slightly different.
It looked really good. I was like, that's tight. I like that. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to see that little effect that they use when they're doing like this transport that I had forgotten about. And I was like, oh. So yeah, I'm excited to see Kamala in space, but I am more excited to get her back to Jersey City and really in her element as a superhero. I think that's going to be really cool.
Eric, any wild conjecture from you?
Not really. I'm wondering if the head guy from Damage Control is a Skrull.
Mm.
But some of that is left over from kind of the end of WandaVision, where the lady who from Damage Control who ends up talking to Monica is a Skrull.
Yeah.
And basically going to take her up to see Nick on the Skrull ship. But as far as going into the movie, maybe while Captain Marvel's stuck on Earth, she pops in and does an interview on Scott Lang's podcast, which would be fantastic. And a good callback to the beginning of the series. But other than that, no. Kamala does get some recording for her YouTube show while she's in space.
Oh, there you go. Little Sloth Baby production in space.
Exactly.
My only thing is I want to see where the Kree stuff goes, because obviously the blue arm with the bangle that Aisha found, that has been the jumping off point. Let's see where that goes, because that I'm sure is going to tie into the Ten Rings. And two, I hope that she teleported to Atalan and Kamala is now hanging out with Lockjaw. That's my big conjecture right there. Well, thank you, gents, for chatting Ms. Marvel. Thank you all for listening. Please feel free to go check out our website at flameonshow.com and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/flameonshow, where you can join at any of the four levels. And we'll be back with our final recap, the recap of the finale, next Friday. And then another microsode coming to you in 2 weeks. So until next time, peace.
EE Full Fiber Broadband can handle all of your gaming needs. 100 patch updates while you boss your multiplayer game. Every neighbor round for a tournament, BYO console. All while your family streams everything and anything around the house, no problem. With EE Full Fiber, you can connect 100 devices in your home. This is broadband that can handle anything.
Next level unlocked.
This is EE Full Fiber, powered by BT.
18.3% UK availability. Check coverage at ee.co.uk.